For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, welcome to Parcast Edmonds Podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks, Matt. Very good. Got a new high-definition webcam if you're watching on YouTube with a bit of extra lighting, so you can see me in all my faded glory.
Yeah, I don't know that your lighting matches my... I need to adjust my lighting to match your lighting now, because... And I know I keep threatening to, like, do something with the environment around me, and I'll get to it at some
point. But I just found out that you're a year older, which is not what I thought.
Yeah, I am a year older. We've got some interesting stuff, some fun stuff to talk about today. Before we get started, I just want to remind you guys of our friends over at Bet Online. Bet Online is the number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB to golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. They have all the latest stats, news, and scores available for your favorite teams. You can get the latest odds and lines, including team matchups, player props, and odds for just about every sport out there. So just head to the website or use your mobile device to get in on the action. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, so I just got this wonderful press release from Porsche, and they're saying, listen, if you're interested in a 718 Cayman GT4 RS, for a little bit of chump change, we are willing to modify that car, or you can order that car with the Manthe package. And that package includes a number of improvements on the aerodynamics and the suspension, but it's not any increase in horsepower, right? I think I saw that correctly, because I keep looking at the price and I keep looking at the modifications and going, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. But they say they did the Nürburgring at 6 seconds faster than the previous GT4 RS, the Cayman.
Yeah, let's clear about Jörg Burgmeister, who, you know, is one of the sports car drivers of his generation, and you know, a works Porsche racer and tester, did a lap of the Nürburgring 6 seconds faster. I guarantee that almost nobody on earth can match that time.
You know, like we talked to Patrick Long a couple of weeks ago before the air.
Maybe Patrick, but I don't think even Patrick's that familiar with the Nordschleifer as Jörg would be.
Wait, that's what I'm saying is, so you're being offered these modifications for the GT4 RS. Modifications that, like you said, 99% of the people, even more than that, would never be able to utilize these modifications. So basically,
Jörg Burgmeister can. That's it.
We know there's one guy, and they've cited that in their press release. There's a number of, like we said, of aerodynamic upgrades, increased downforce, increased spring rates in the suspension, modified the coilovers. There's some adjustability to it, to the wing, to the shocks, and yes, as you were saying before the show, maybe you want an extra click on those dampers on your way to Cars and Coffee, and how would you know how effective that was anyway?
Well, I love this stuff, but the revisions to the aerodynamic parts for a near doubling of downforce, I'm reading directly from a press release, at 124 miles an hour, which is extremely useful. Yeah. At approximately, it's very German, this, isn't it? At approximately 124 miles an hour, when the rear wing is set to the performance position intended for track use, total downforce increases from 196 pounds on the standard car to 372 pounds. And then they've done stuff like have to support the engine because of all this extra force acting on the rear end. Steel brake lines are now standard component. I mean, it kind of goes on and on. Spring struts can be adjusted at four different positions, and the rebound and the compression stages can be adjusted without the need for tools. So, I mean, that's super handy if you're a suspension engineer. Not only that, but you have to be a suspension engineer who is better than a Porsche suspension engineer.
Yeah, or really. At least as good. You know,
at least it's good.
You could be like 80% there and probably benefit from this package. Now, listen, we're all jokes aside. This is really about the collectability than it is anything else. And it should be because the package costs $53,946 on top of the price of the vehicle.
And so the price is, well, what, 150 grand, isn't it? GT4 RS?
So
that's another.
Another $54,000.
So it's another third again.
But wait, there's more. If you want the additional front fender louvers, which I assume is all carbon fiber and has the visual components, that's another $5,890. So about $5,900. So for about $60,000, you can get this Manthe package to your GT4 RS as you're buying a new GT4 RS. If you already have one, I don't think you can get it.
But you've missed the kicker, actually, because that doesn't, looking at the press release, we're both reading it in real time. That gets you the kit, but that's just sitting on your living room floor. So I have no idea what, it then costs to install, because that excludes installation. But you can't buy the standard kit and not go for the front fender louvers, because that would be ludicrous. Because can you imagine going to the can you imagine turning up at Cars and Coffee and you haven't bought the louvers? So you spent 50 odd grand, whatever it costs to install, and you haven't bought the louvers. I remember doing a track day at Spa in Belgium and turning up in a Carrera that wasn't a Carrera S and just being vilified by the community.
What were you thinking?
It was extraordinary. It was a press car, and it was a Carrera on carbon ceramic brakes. So actually it was a fantastic car because it was just a really nice thing. But it's like, no, you haven't got an S. So one of my friends took a bit of masking tape and actually like did an S after the Carrera for the rest of the day.
Did you return the press car early and said, "You embarrassed me, Porsche? How dare you?"
I love Porsches to bits, but regular listeners will know I have an old classic 911. But yeah, some of the psychology that goes with it, I'm not a big fan of. But I mean, they have the Manthe for the GT3, and obviously they're now the Manthe for the GT4 RS. And you know, I think this RS and the RS Spider, which they're just rolling out over here, are going to be super collectible because the next Cayman is going to be electric. So it's almost like that thing, isn't it? Like, not only have you got a rare GT4 RS, you've got the rare GT4 RS Manthe, and now you can stick it away. And in 20 years' time, it's your pension pot. But you still, maybe.
Is Porsche trying to chase collectability with the Cayman like they have already with 911s and certainly the GT cars? I mean, because the original Boxsters, like, there's some that are like a few thousand dollars, right? There's some junk that you can buy.
The Boxsters almost become disposable at the bottom of the market because once you get down, as you say, to like 10, 15 grand, anything meaningful that goes wrong means it's totaled.
Yeah.
So you do a gearbox, you do anything of any substance is basically the car's a write-off. So they're almost like a disposable Boxster. But there are some, you know, the Boxster and the Cayman. I remember when I was at the original launch of the Cayman donkeys years ago. And I remember one of my co-workers in the press asking Walter Roll, who was the chief test driver at the time and, of course, former double world rally champion, said, "Why hasn't it got a limited slip differential? Because it just seems such an omission."
Yeah.
He said that because the marketing men will not, this is a bad German accent, but he basically said, "Because the marketing men will not let me have one." And it was all, they were so paranoid that they'd got a mid-engined Porsche,
a well,
which was
going
to be better
car
to drive than a 911. So it's like, what can we do to basically screw this thing up? Don't give it a rear limited slip diff. Don't give it tons of power. Keep that GT3 engine as far away from it as possible. And none of that really played out because I think for their traditional customer, people just wanted a 911. You either bought a Boxster at the base Boxster or you wanted 911. But then a few have come out, like the Spiders, the Cayman, the Boxster Spider, which I'd have any of them in a heartbeat. I think they're beautiful cars. They've all been very collectible. And then now in its death throes, they basically, oh, go on then, stick a GT3 engine in because we'll sell a few and it doesn't really matter. So now you've got GT4 RS, GT4 RS Spider, now the Manthe edition. And I think they've just realized over time that people want 911s or buy 911s. And, you know, there's also big margin in a GT4 RS. But it's a cool car. You driven a GT4 RS? It's a fantastic thing.
I have not.
It's even more than a GT3 RS or something. It's very hardcore. You've got the air intakes like where your ears are, so you know you kind of worry about like getting tinnitus. I mean, it's very extreme and really thrilling. I haven't driven the RS Spider yet, which might be maybe not on a track, but certainly on the road might be even better. And they're a really cool thing because mid engine GT3 engine. I think if it was my money, I'd still have a GT3 for the same money as a GT4 RS. But I can understand why you go the other way.
Yeah. I drove the 911 GT3. I don't think an RS. I drove the GT3 on a track a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago. That was fun. I did that with Ferrari, sort of a back-to-back thing.
They're a cool thing.
Yeah.
They are a very cool thing. But if you're not going to track it, though, they're quite full on. You know, it's not a car for a weekend away.
You know, I was there with some other people and some instructors too, and they were like GT3, GT3 RS. They're like, you're going to be more comfortable in the GT3, and you're probably not going to go significantly faster in the RS around the lap because you're like, you know, like we were saying, your skill level is kind of the hard out as opposed to the car itself. You know.
You've got to be really anything with downforce. You've got to be really good and also used to downforce as well. I think what people don't really appreciate is how counterintuitive downforce is. You know that you've got to get used to cars with downforce and just the speed that you have to be going to. You know, to make it work. And
yeah,
it's all nonsense, really. But, you know,
I mean, it is.
People buy it and they enjoy it.
At the end of the day, it's about the collectability. It's about the conversation. You know, look, you could put me in that $200,000 Cayman, you know, Manthe edition and put Patrick Long in a stock Boxster from 20 years ago, and he's going to whoop my ass around the track. It doesn't matter what he's driving. That's just the reality of it. But, you know, at the end of, after we're done, I get to talk about my fancy $200,000 car and he doesn't, but, you know, luckily for me, that's not a reality.
It's true. The other car actually that, came out this week is on the edmunds.com/news as the 2025 BMW M4 CS, similar concept. Loads of, you know, this has got all-wheel drive, but it can do the rear-wheel drive thing, rework suspension, of course, a higher price. So this will be $125,000 production due to start in July. Like, it's another cool thing. They've got the gold wheels, of course. And this is one car, actually, where this generation of M4 is, you know, that really kind of, to my mind, really ugly nose. But when you get this extreme, when it gets so silly with all the aerodynamic add-ons, it all kind of works because it just looks so aggressive.
Yeah.
That it actually starts to, that kind of very aggressive shape starts to work. There you go. Look at that thing. Gold wheels, fat nostrils.
Yeah, right. Not the design that I loved. It kind of looks even a little better with the big license plate on the front.
Yeah, because it breaks it up. It's still though 100. I still can't get my head around. I know we say this every week at the moment, but I still struggle to wrap my head around paying $125,000 for BMW M4.
I mean, I think when I got my E36 M3. I think it was like $42,000.
That's the six-cylinder one?
Yeah, E36. In 1999. Wow. Yeah, 99. Before the E46, which I had one of those, but the E36, the 240 horsepower one. And, you know, I got that car and I was just like, this is the most expensive thing I'm ever going to buy in my life. Like, I can't believe it. Now I got
how old are you? You must have been truck. About, what were you, like 20?
Yeah, you know, in another life, I had run an internet company, something that I started in school. And after a few years, I was able to buy like a real new car, you know. Yeah. So my young self went to BMW and said, I would like this M3, please. And,
that's very cool.
And I did. But yeah, to go from a $42,000 car now to $130,000 M3, M4.
I remember doing the launch of the V8, the V8 M3 that came out. But partly I remember doing the launch, which again could be very collectible because they're the V8 manual. But I also remember it because I don't know whether you ever remember there was something called a BMW C1, which was like a little scooter for the road, but had like a roof. Did they ever make it to America?
No, I don't know that they had them here, but I do know what you're talking about.
I don't know
about.
Whether you can show it on the YouTube. This was an idea for Europe where you had. So basically, it's a scooter with a roof where it rains. And it was a community in Europe. But they did the M3 launch at Jerez in Spain. And they said, oh, but at lunchtime, go and have a play on one of these. But I'd never really ridden anything like this. And I was a very young guy. I think I was 22 or something. And I crashed the C1 scooter. And it was a really silly thing. Because it's a scooter in which you're strapped in, which was part of the reason why they didn't sell very well. Because you were strapped in. And in the UK, you had to wear a helmet as well. So I actually felt more dangerous. So I can remember crashing this thing at Jerez in Spain and being sort of dangling upside down from the seatbelts. There you go. Look at that thing. The BMW C1.
Yeah, we're just bringing up an image of it.
That's my abiding memory of the M3 launch, the fact that I crashed one of their scooters and had to ring the PR guy whilst dangling upside down from the seatbelt saying, A, can you get me out of your scooter, and B, terribly sorry. But anyway, we digress.
Okay, so I want to.
They're probably $100,000 today. They're probably
really expensive. I'm going to show you an image, and then you can explain it to our podcast listeners, and we can talk a little bit about it.
Okay. The world awaits. Great. Oh, it's my little car.
There's your adorable little ride, which we've talked about a few times, but I, for some reason, never had photos of it until now. Probably because you've been.
So this is I have a 1997 911, which is the last of the air cooled, the 993 for the geeks out there. And before everybody says, oh, you're obviously earning far too much, this is the finest investment I've ever made. I bought one for £25,000 when I already thought I'd missed the market. I already thought like it was too expensive. And then when I moved to the US, I sold it for $50,000 to a friend, and then use that money to buy one over here. And I was going to buy something else. And then there was a car that was almost identical to the car I had in the UK. And I basically ring-fenced the money mentally. I bought another one. And I did something I rarely do last weekend, which was to go for a drive in Malibu. A couple of local friends, local dads in the neighborhood. And we had a little drive out. There was a guy with a 911 SC from the early 80s, which was lovely.
This is the Porsche dad club that you're in here with these cars.
This is pretty much there's a local dad who's a doctor, has got an old 991. There's a guy who's a cancer doctor. So, I certainly don't begrudge him. He's got a GT3, and he told me a lovely story. He said that I have the job, which is, you know, it's a tough job. I give people a lot of very difficult news. And this is my way of unwinding. To go for a drive. And it was just really fun. And in my job, I spent a lot of time driving and jumping in and out of different cars, but it's not often that I just kind of get up and go for a drive for the sake of it. And it was just really nice to go through the hills and also like the sense of community. Like Sunday morning in Southern California, there's so many people out with different cars, and not all, there were some Ferraris out there and Lambos and some, you know, high end stuff, but also just people, you know, out in Miatas and things like that, just enjoying cars, enjoying the road, enjoying kind of being out in, you know, on a nice Sunday morning. And you sort of forget sometimes that you know, that exists and that culture is great.
You know, and I haven't been out in a while doing sort of the weekend like canyon runs. Truthfully, it's just it's become so popular that it's a bit of a traffic jam. I guess if you know you got to get up pretty early or find a different location, but it's been there's a few areas where like it's not that much.
It is like turning up at the Nürburgring a little bit. That same sort of cars together, and it's you have to get up early. But as you've got little kids, you have to get up early because it's the only way you can get a pass to go out. So I was back home by 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not really tolerated going for a drive for several hours.
But you know, I'm kind of looking forward to it. As I was saying on the podcast earlier in the week with Goldberg, is the Mustang Mach 1 that I have that I took to the SEMA show. I haven't really fully been able to spend time on dialing it in. It runs fine, but it just needed a little bit more tuning. So I finally got a chance the other day to take it out to Full Throttle Customs. My friend Ray McClellan runs that shop, and he's going to do some dyno tuning on it to kind of get it really kind of, like I said, it runs fine. It's not a bad tune. I just think it's a little down on power. It just can be a little, could perform a little bit better overall. And I think he's going to just try to dial that in a little bit more for me. And then I'll be able to take it out and have some.
So what we're going to do, Matt, is once you've done that, let's get it down the Edmunds test track. We'll run some numbers on it. We'll get Jonathan our head of testing behind the wheel. We can run all the data. Then we'll get you to Edmunds U Drags. You can take us, you know, we'll see what you can actually do. We just sold the GT500, so that's gone. But we'd love to get you up there.
You're a test driver. Does he can he drive a manual? Mine's a manual. Just curious.
Can he drive a manual? Yes.
I don't know.
Clues in the name, test driver. Yes, yes.
These youngsters today, I'm telling you.
He's not that young. If he's listening, he's not that young. He's younger than me and you, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, I think beta prerequisite. Beta prerequisite of our test drive. We still test a few cars with sticks. We still get Miatas through and Civic SIs. I mean, it's obviously 911s. There's a few.
Yeah. Well, we'll have him brush up in a Miata or a Civic or something.
Well, he's got an M Coupe. Jonathan drives an M Coupe as his car. So
okay. Well, there you go. It would be fun to take out there. I know you guys got data on the Mustangs and the new Mustangs and the GT500 and pretty much everything else out there. I'm curious to know if all the money I dumped into that car was a big waste of time or not.
You could have had a Manthe suspension kit.
Yeah, I could have been that. I could have been put $50,000, $60,000 into the car and then have no skill at all to leverage any of it. The only thing I could do is use the audio system that I invested in because I am a professional stereo listener as opposed to a driver. That part I could.
Well, bring it down the test track. We'll run the numbers. Then we have this wonderful master sheet, which we're trying to find a way of publishing on the website. It's actually quite complicated, but we have a kind of a glorified Excel document, which is every car we've ever tested.
Yeah.
And it's like for the geek in you, it's fantastic. Because we were looking at the Ioniq 5 end results and how fast is it? And you could just basically sort by 0 to 60 or sort by quarter mile as to where it sits in the thing. So you would have you'd have nowhere to hide. We could see where it lined up.
I'd like to see that. Yeah, you're going to have to figure out a way to make that happen on the internet, make it user accessible. And
it would be really fun to do. But as you know, and from your previous life, these things are not that easy to put.
They're not that easy. I want to talk about Twitter for a second. But before we do, let's just take a quick break.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, here we are. We're back. First of all, I want to say thanks. I'm going on almost 15 years of doing CarCast. I believe in June it'll be 15 years. And there are some listeners of this podcast that have been around from pretty much day one. And I appreciate that. They think of some of the very first guests that were on the show. And for a few years, I was working behind the scenes and not really hosting it. But guests like Dax Shepard and Jay Leno and stuff that were on very early before we even kind of knew what we were doing with the show. So I appreciate all of you guys.
So I just like we knew what we were doing with the show because now because today we're just like so switched on.
yeah.
But I mean now we're so slick and polished and professional. I mean it's unbelievable.
That being said, I think every time we log on here and we chit chat before we start recording, we can't help but have a little bit of a chuckle on some of the Twitter comments that get posted.
The platform formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, on X. And you might have some in front of you. But last week's podcast, I believe, was the... Oh, that was the Cylindri. So the week before, the Hyundai Ioniq 5N. And we said, you went to the track for a press event, a bunch of media, and had a chance to drive this car and came back and said, it was one of the most fun EVs you have driven. And actually—
Even more than that, Matt, we had it at the Edmunds test track. I spent like a week in it. So we had it back to back. So we did drive at Laguna Seca on the press event, but this was actually at the Edmunds test track. So— spent the days in the thing. Anyway,
explain why the sound that they put into it is just kind of fun, and they had this great like, you know,
it's as fast as a GT3. It'll go. It's got a drift mode. It'll go super sideways. It's got this amazing like little flappy paddle impersonator thing that works far better than you could possibly imagine. It's a really fun thing. It's like I know that one of the engineers behind it, and we were chatting on LinkedIn and. It's like a Ford Focus RS, and he was inspired. He's obsessed with Group B rally cars, a guy called Tyrone Johnson. So he's basically a Group B rally car in homage to a Group B rally car as an electric car. Love it to bits. Wish it was a bit cheaper than 70 grand, but it's still amazing, amazing toy. So do you want to read the quote?
I'm not distracted. I'm scrolling through. But by the way, the Laguna Seca event that Hyundai put on, I wasn't able to attend that. You guys went, and other people in the media have come back and said that was a fun event. This is a super fun car, one of the best press events they've gone to in a long time. Apparently, very well done and a fun car. All we said was it's a fun EV, and
we'd say it's the most fun EV, which is actually something I do say in the video. That basically I said, look. I went to Spain the other week to drive a Taycan Turbo GT Vizac edition. And genuinely, I think this is more fun in the way that it's so agile and, you know, so versatile. So comment number one.
Yeah.
A quote from a person that has never driven a Tesla, to which our social guy, Andy, responded, we've owned a few. And then you've got somebody very kindly, Pomodoro, whoever that be, yes, they did. You just do not follow them. Go to their website and look at their long-term fleet. You will find that they are telling the truth. So I love the fact that you have like real people like engaging in the debate and doing our job for us.
People that listen to podcasts, you've owned a Tesla, not to mention Edmunds has owned many. You've personally owned a Tesla. And Okay. I like the one that just says liars in all
caps. Psalm 3713, liars. Edmunds has got a lot of, so it's great. Anything, I mean, this has been going on for years. Anything Tesla related or anything that sort of, you know, invokes some implied criticism of Tesla gets,
gets this
kind of response.
That one was kind of fun because I was like, I'm not quite sure who's lying and what we're lying about. Is the social media post alive? Was a lie? Was the podcast alive? Did you not really have fun? Is that it?
Hyundai makes the most fun car ever, said no one ever. Well, apart from me.
Yeah, right. So, so at least one person has said it.
Anyway, we should digress. You can understand, you can really sort of dig yourself a hole. That's why I hadn't even looked at it. You can sort of get how many people have actually seen the tweet? 230,000 or something.
And then last week we talked about
230,000.
The Ferrari 12 cylindry.
Yes.
And a comment is he bright? I think not. WTF is a cylindry. I was like,
it's Italian.
You didn't make up the name either. Ferrari made up the name. Why are you getting blamed? Or me or you are like, why are we getting blamed for the name? It's Italian.
It's Italian. It may have been a bad Italian accent, but it's Italian.
Maybe that was the confusion.
It's a murky world out there. I've even had it on my own Instagram. I said something rude about Tesla, and then somebody found me on Weaver on Cars, which, let's face it, has not got hundreds of thousands of followers. But it's great. Obviously, you need to follow it. But somebody just broke into my, well, not broke in, but came onto my account and just put, you are the worst journalist ever. And that was it. It's like, okay.
Having some fun on X. Twitter, or I don't know. I just can't get behind X. I don't know what to call it when you tweet. Like,
do you
if it's
exit
on Twitter and you
do exit? Exit sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Do exit?
I don't know.
X. I X'd. If I'm you sure. posted a post,
did you exit?
X. I don't know. I guess that's part of the, because we're not reading, like, you know, these shows that do, you know, they read the tweets or the mean tweets or whatever. Like, what's a mean X? Mean X'd? I mean,
we tried that. We tried that one Christmas as a YouTube show where we tried to read like our mean tweets.
Yeah.
Didn't get big numbers. Didn't repeat it. But it was quite fun. It was quite fun to do.
Anyway, it's kind of fun and entertaining to see. And I know some of you guys listening are laughing because you guys understand.
I know I know in my heart that you're laughing.
the disconnect between the comments. By the way, all comments from people that don't really listen to the podcast or read the articles or click through, they just like to comment and see if we will respond. And the Edmunds social media manager, Andrew, he has a very interesting job. Sometimes you can see that they bait him and they try to reel him in a little bit. and anyway, I hope he's having fun with it.
He has. He's done a fine job.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out like what else was on the docket for today. I wanted
to
go over the Porsche stuff.
We were going over to Tacoma. We talked about the Ranger last week. Tacoma. Yeah. Finally drove the Tacoma, which we now own a Tacoma, a Colorado, and a Ranger.
And a Ranger.
Tacoma's an interesting one. I mean, they're going to sell billions of the thing. It looks cool. Interior is way better than the old one. Massive screen. And yet we're not alone in this. We're still just a wee bit disappointed by it. There's just... You kind of get the impression, and we've seen this before with like Honda Civic, you know, it's almost like a Japanese, and it can be, some of the Japanese brands have this, you know, this Kaizen, this idea of constant evolution. But it's almost like they've taken a punt at where everybody else will be. And then I remember we talked about this last week on the show, it was off air, but it's like they got a sense of where everybody else would be. But then actually GM and Ford have taken a bigger step maybe than they anticipated. And you know, it looks good, interior's good, but it feels more trucky than the other two. It's a little bit less refined. And even inside, some of the plastics feel a little bit hard, a little bit cheap. And I know it's a truck and it's supposed to feel trucky, and you don't expect kind of, you know, Mercedes S-Class interiors. But, you know, the Ranger and the Colorado have really moved the game on, and the Tacomas, you just feel like the Tacoma's just a step behind it. But it will be interesting when the hybrid version comes out, and we've got the hybrid. We spend more time in the hybrid. You know, I think that potentially might make a big difference, and they'll evolve it over time. And, you know, the other thing that we had, the Ranger, I know Ford's working really hard on some of the quality stuff, but, you know, there's a few little niggles on the Ranger, like the doors don't shut properly and just a few little quality things. And the Toyota being a Toyota feels pretty much bulletproof. But we have the TRD performance, and no, sorry, the TRD TRD off-road. I'm sorry.
One of the issues that we talked about, I think it was a week or 2 weeks ago, about the Tacoma was, yes, it didn't excel compared to the other ones. And then when pricing came in, it turned out it's very expensive. Had it been outstanding, then the discussion would be, is it worth the extra cost? But now it's starting to be like, not really, because it seems pretty pricey.
Yeah, they've already, I was just looking at their website, they've already got some, you know, some decent lease offers and things on it. And, you know, we are entering a really interesting period where, you know, now we've got supply back into the marketplace. So, you know, we're starting to see pretty aggressive deals. We know that EVs have a bit of a slowdown, and there's been some pretty aggressive deals on EVs, but on gas cars as well, we're starting to see more and more deals and offers and people trying to shift stock and, you know, almost going back, not quite, but almost going back to some of the pre-pandemic stuff. And, you know, this is a really interesting period. Maybe we should get Jessica back on, and we had on a few weeks ago, talk about the market today. That could be quite an interesting conversation, because it's a real sense of transition. A lot of EVs are struggling to sell. But also in the ICE world, it's not clear cut either. You know, it's a tough market. I think a lot of people are still looking at the fact that you've got high interest rates, so you're going to be paying a lot per month. And I think what we're seeing is people just in the new and the used markets just saying, well, we're going to hang on to my car because maybe I've got a CRV, maybe I want a new CRV or a nearly new CRV, but actually I'm going from 400 a month to 550, 600 a month, and most of that's interest rate. So
yeah,
I don't want to make that jump. So it's a really interesting time right now. And, you know, Tacoma's come into that market, and obviously they've got 4Runner coming out shortly. They've got Land Cruiser just hit. Land Cruiser, I think initially, you know, let's talk about dealer markups, because it's going to be a bit of a culty car at first. But yeah, it's a really interesting time, and maybe that'll be a good show. We get Jessica back on and just talk about where the market is right now.
When she was on before, I mean, we were talking about, even just a minute ago, like my BMW E36. Cars are expensive now. You know, I could get an M3, you know, a premium edition car for $42,000 back then, you know, 25 years ago.
Yes.
I guess you get anything cheaper 25 years ago. But yes, it seemed to really kind of balloon up.
I drove home last night in a Mercedes EQE, which is,
yeah,
we've been a bit lukewarm on some of Mercedes EVs. This is the sedan version. You know that crazy naming policy now, where you can have an EQE sedan or SUV. But again, it's like 86 grand, but then with the options on it, it's like 103 grand. And he's like, wow.
Wait, were you driving the sedan or the SUV?
This is the sedan. Okay. And like some of the options aren't, you know, it's not like crazy stuff. It's some you don't need, but it's like air suspension, winter package, a couple of AMG kits. Suddenly you hit 100 grand. And to my mind, that's basically an electric E-Class for 100 grand.
Yeah.
But it's a nice thing. I mean, we like the i5, the BMW i5. That was the Edmunds Top Raider car. But this EQE, I prefer it to the EQS, which is the bigger one, but a bit really didn't feel like worthy of the money. This is um, this is it's a nice way to travel. But
I drove this. I drove this and I drove the SUV. And yeah, altogether a nice car and some pretty cool stuff they're doing in the interior. There's a few things that's a little bit of a learning curve. Some of the switches and haptic touch and sliding of the fingers around. And it's definitely a car that you got to read the manual before you drive it. There's a little bit of a learning curve going on, but it just kind of lost something on me. It just wasn't like, I'm so blown away and it's so gorgeous. Like I have to get a Mercedes, and it just didn't seem to have that, that some of their previous cars did, or even some of their gas engine cars still do.
And there is a sort of weird irony about it that Mercedes decided that they're going to invest the money in doing an E-Class sedan gas car, and then an EQE, you know, same footprint on the road, but as a bespoke electric car. And BMW said, nah, we haven't got that much money. We're going to do a 5 Series, and then you can basically have it without whatever powertrain you want. I actually kind of prefer the i5. In theory, it should be a lot more compromised because it's built as a gas car that can also accommodate an electric powertrain. But actually, the i5s are really good. Yeah. So, you know, really, I mean, we talk about this all the time. It's just a super interesting period. Yeah, I mean, the S-Class, the E-Class is quite a, you know, different car.
I just put up a picture of the E-Class, though, but in my mind, a significantly better looking car than the electric one.
Yeah, I think what Mercedes tried to do with their electric is they're trying to make a statement that it's electric. So they're trying to give it more of a kind of like what in design terms you call a one box style, where almost you've got like one continuous line, like a streamliner through the hood, over the body and down to the trunk. Whereas the sedan is the E-Class is much more traditional, which is, you know, engine at the front, trunk at the rear.
Yeah. And the EV version, you know, the aerodynamics that they're trying to put into it, just trying to make it as smooth as possible. Mm. I just think it ended up losing a little something. I think the aerodynamics kind of drove the design a little bit more than the designer.
Looks a bit blobby.
Yeah. It's kind of a odd kind of egg shape to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If you want like an Aero EV, you just end up in the same place. Everything looks like a Hyundai Ioniq 6, and the EQE looks quite a lot like a Hyundai Ioniq 6.
It kind of does, right? Although, yeah. You know, Mercedes said they're doing the electric G-Wagon, and they didn't really do much different on that. It's still just a brick with a battery.
They just invited Kendall Jenner to come and have a look at it, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think we're going to wrap things up for today. Is there anything we're missing?
Nope. I think we're good. Lots of things in lots of ways, but probably not for the show. Still waiting for the Cybertruck. Still hasn't arrived.
Oh yeah. You're waiting for your Cybertruck. I already forgot about it. It's old news.
I think it's this like accelerator thing. I don't know whether it's actually technically being delivered yet, but we kind of thought it was on its way and now it's not quite. So.
If you guys haven't popped over to Edmunds in a while, check out Edmunds.com. You can check out the news page. Like you said, there's the long-term Ranger that you guys bought that's up there now. Well, will be a long-term fleet car for you guys. Some great new stuff, but also the U-Drag videos. I was looking at the BMW M2 versus the Nissan Z Nismo. That's an interesting head-to-head. So, yeah, it kind of gets me a little bit more excited about maybe getting the Mach 1 out there at one point. I don't know. Have you guys tested an aftermarket modified vehicle against anything?
No, you would be the first. You would be the pioneer. It's funny, like the whole U-Drags thing started as a bit of fun. It's all got a bit serious because Nissan actually sent not only the PR team but also an engineer out to make sure that the Nismo was properly set up. And then Chevy did this. McLaren came up, Chevy came up. So the whole thing's become a thing. Like, it's like, no, actually, we also know of another manufacturer named Nameless who worked out where our location was and went and did like, they use it for testing occasionally and actually like set up the course and did some testing to work out like what appropriate time would be for their car. So it's funny. We did this as a bit of a laugh because we thought drag racing had become hackneyed and we wanted to have some fun and do something different that was a bit more Edmunds. And yeah, it's kind of taken on a bit of a life of its own. So yeah, we would welcome kind of we flirted with different ideas about like modified cars or getting people to come along. And as you know, there's always challenges with some of the legalities with this sort of thing and the health and safety and all that kind of thing. But yeah, there's more to come. We did the motorbike against. If you want to go on YouTube, you can still find 911 Turbo S against the what's the thing? Kawasaki. Oh, I'm not big on bikes. It was basically the nuttiest bike you can buy.
Yeah, I don't remember.
With a drag racer on board. Sadly, I wasn't there. I was away at the time, but it was quite an event, apparently.
Yeah, which one was that? The motorcycle? I don't
know. Kawasaki.
We'll you can find it. You can find it on the Edmunds YouTube channel. All right, we're going to wrap things up. And like I said before, if you guys want to watch any of this, you can hop over to the CarCast YouTube channel and you can see us as well as hear us or continue to subscribe to the podcast. We appreciate you guys. Thanks so much. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.